Okay, listen up, girlies. I've been meaning to shout out these queens for a minute. You gotta check out the pod Tres Leches. It is so fucking funny, and I'm obsessed with the hosts. You probably know all of them. It's Juan Torres Falcon, Johnny Sibley, Ian Padgett, and they're not only theater queens, but they're also super hot and honest, and they've got great guests on, like Mario Cantone just did the pod. So please show them some gay-ass love and go listen to Tres Leches, the pod.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and it's a big week here because we just witnessed one of the best Tony Awards in recent history, and that is why Maddie Magiacomo, my sexy friend, is here to unpack. Now, Maddie is a star instructress at Peloton and also a total theater fagatrini, so it's perfect timing to have her on the pod. If you're in Los Angeles, I'm doing my solo show, Why All the Drama, on June 25th at Lyric Hyperion. I dropped the link for those tickets there. It's a very horny, gay, Jewy show, and I would love to see you there. And I'm doing it in New York next month, July 17th. That's enough. Let's have some Tony talk and gay assery with Maddie Magiacomo.
Maddie, we both have emotional hangovers from the Tony Awards, but you have a real hangover because you were literally there last night. Maddie, how are you feeling on this Monday?
Am I breathing heavy?
Ooh, that's hot.
Yes. Oh, you like that? Oh my goodness, the hangover is real. The hangover from the excitement, right? As a theater kid, that was my first time, Eric,
in Mazel the tov.
House. First time in the house, and truly not affiliated. So here's the thing about me. I'm not an actor. I've never been an actor. I did drama club in high school, as is required for every
gay
burgeoning gay.
Yeah.
And so clearly that's where I found myself, and I found all the misfits and the freaks, and I was like, I love it here. Let's do Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Mm.
But I moved into what essentially became a TV career, what essentially became a fitness career, which essentially became a fitness TV career. But I have been the consummate Broadway theater nerd.
Well,
forever. I'm a fan.
I think
fan.
You are not giving yourself enough credit for some of the insidiness, because you are one best friends with Jessica Vosk,
who?
She's not exactly just like an up and comer. She sort of actually was a big part of the Tonys last night. So was she your in? Not to be a dick, but was your in?
Tickets were generously gifted to me. And so therefore, yes, I went as like a paying member of the audience,
which was
very nice. And then actually Jessica didn't even stay for the show. She did the carpet and then she went back to her hotel to rest her feet because then she had a performance after the show. And so, yeah, it was just, and that's the thing. I try and see as much theater as I possibly can. There's a mix. Sometimes press invites me, but I am a true supporter of the art. So like, if you have the means, right, it's important that you pay for a full price ticket.
And
full price to everybody thinks that I just go for free and I put it on social media, or I'm getting paid for the shows. I never, anything that I put out on social media, I never get paid for a show. The truth is, actually, if you do, I learned this because obviously when you do social media partnerships, whatever, if you do social media partnerships with a show, which typically they're not a whole lot of budgets to do that because a lot of the folks do it organically. You kind of can't be on a press list anymore. They're like, no, you can't be on the press list anymore because you're being paid by certain shows. So like, I prefer just to, let's pay full price. It's nice if I get an invite to go see something. If I love it, I promote it because I love it. I never trash a show.
I don't either. That's what feels so like divisive about this year for the Tonys is that people are taking it so personally in a way that is sort of exciting, but also full on like trash. Like, I feel like a lot of people have lost the plot and would very much benefit from touching grass. But I do think people who think that you're only doing things for like branded or like paying it, they're underestimating your theater fackiness. And sure. That's why I would love to, of course, ask you so many questions I have about your gay life. But since the Tonys are so fresh, how do you feel, number one, about Cynthia Erivo as host? Were you living? Should she do it again? How do you feel?
Look, I'm a Cynthia stan. I'm a Cynthia stan since I sat like third row at Color Purple. I remember sitting at Color Purple and sitting and being excited to see J-Hud, right? And I was sitting next to these two women. I said, oh my God, so excited to see J-Hud. They said, J-Hud, wait until you hear Cynthia. I said, Cynthia who?
Hmm?
And ever since then, I was transformed. So Cynthia can do no wrong in my eyes. I love her hustle. I think she's beautiful. I think we've never had somebody who performs the way that she does. I mean, I don't know who else comes to mind.
I think she is a generational. And I think that's why last night, what was so great about what they did with her is that they opened the show, sure, with a bit of a sketch that, shout out to the people we know in that sketch, Drew Droege, Tim Murray, Alex Edelman.
I loved their posts after. They were so excited. Good.
But then to have her just get on stage and belt her tits off, I think that is like, you're seeing a full artist host a very kitschy show. And I thought they did it so well to have her like, sure, do her bits, which like, I'm going to say something. Was she an incredible host? 100%. Should she do it again? 300%. Is she amazing? 400%. Is she funny? No.
She's not funny.
But,
no.
But as Zach Schiffman tweeted, who is a very funny comedian, he said, so it turns out you don't have to be a funny awards show host if you have the most incredible voice on the planet. And I co-sign. I do think she's charming. I do think that she's got the it factor. I think she's a fucking legend and a star. And I don't think she's the funniest, but that's like okay because they used her so well. And the bits that they had her do were actually quite delish.
100%. And it was a diversion from what we normally see. Like, do we need love NPH? Do we need NPH up there again? Probably not, you know. And actually, I loved the Neil Patrick Harris line. I thought that was really funny.
Oh, yeah. Cynthia Erivo completely nailed the hosting job, but I was also surprised at how much I loved the Hamilton performance.
I mean, that's headline there. I mean, I think people were watching to see who won Best Lead Actress in a Musical, obviously Nicole or Audra, right? And then they were waiting for the 10-year anniversary. That was amazing. How stylistic it was. Wow.
Well, yeah, because I think a lot of people said that like they were surprised they weren't wearing costumes, and I honestly was too, because I just like, you only just picture Hamilton performing in the costumes.
They were in suits.
They were in like, yeah, it was so dramatique.
It was great.
And seeing all the original cast members, I don't know. It's like I had Hamilton fatigue for a while, and I feel like I've lost the fatigue, and now I'm back to like it fucking was a moment. And Lin, I think, doesn't deserve as much of the eye rolls that he gets, because he is incredible.
He is. It's funny. I went to an event at Town Hall and they honored Lin. You know, Lin's 45. And the jokes that kept being said that evening was like, it was as if he had passed, because it was like they're honoring a man who's 45 years old, but is so prolific. Speaking of Hamilton, right? So prolific in what he has accomplished in 45 years on this earth. But they were literally honoring him as if it was Sondheim. But the body of work, it speaks for itself. The guy, he writes nonstop. He doesn't stop. He's amazing.
Yeah, I am He's curious amazing. To see, like, you know, he has huge hits post Hamilton, but I wonder what will be his like next return to Broadway moment, because I'm sure he's going to wait. But I think it's also interesting, since you brought up the Audraverse, Nicole, of how divisive it got this year. And I think that it's important for us to share in this discourse, because we witnessed a huge moment with Nicole winning, regardless of how people feel. It was like, I mean, producer Nathaniel said before we recorded, he was the most excited about this Tony Awards since the 2005 telecast. Where did you stand on just like, who did you want to win based on performance alone? Like, let's keep it simple to start.
Yeah. I had been in Nicole's pocket for a while. Okay. So all the politics aside, all of the messy stuff, which we don't have to get into the nitty gritty of it. Obviously, the Patty drama really helped Audra. So you have all the voters, right? I think the voters could vote up until, really up until, was it last Saturday?
I mean, it was recent. It was recent. Yeah.
It's only a few days before that the deadline finishes. So, like, you know, the longer that went on, the more that was going to hurt Nicole. I think Audra, that performance, I mean, when she's doing Rose's turn, the snot and the what's coming out of her face. I thought her clothes were going to blow off of her, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, wow, Audra is giving something that I've never seen her give before. However, Nicole's mastery and Nicole's professionalism, she's been playing that role for 2 years. And she gets out there. I don't think she's even missed a performance. She gets out there and she gives and she milks it. And it's if 110% were even a thing, she gives 110% every single time. I've seen it three times. And then every performance, you've seen the recorded performances. I mean, you're just like, girl.
Oh, I saw both Audra and Nicole, I think like right one after the other, like 2 days. And I agree with you. Like, Audra was obviously great, but I think that Nicole is going down in like my top five favorite performances I've ever seen on Broadway. Probably up there with Cynthia Erivo in Color Purple. But I think that the thing that I find to be so cuckoo luku is how much of the outside politics infiltrated the Tony race, which makes me partly want to really like throttle some teenagers and tell them to. Take a breath, because at the end of the day, we are talking about musical theater. We are talking about women belting on a stage. And and I know that it has a deep importance. However, I've been afraid to say it that I was Team Nicole for a long time. But I even posted it to my Instagram last night and I was like waiting for the hate comments. And only one person messaged me, "I can't wait for you to get doxxed," which really, when you consider all the hate it could have been. But the thing is Ira Madison has been on this pod and he has an amazing Substack that he's written about the Nicole Scherzinger and the Patty and the Audra of it all. And he said something that I fully agree with regarding Nicole's "where do I get this hat" comment. Because I think that's where the Nicole
That's where it all came from. Began. Yeah, of course. Right. The Russell Brand.
Yeah. So
right.
His hat said, "Make Jesus First Again." And like, it was right around when Trump got elected, like right after. And she commented that. And Ira said, "I'm not entirely sure this confirms Scherzinger as MAGA. I just think she really loves Jesus and she's stupid." Now, listen, I'm not going to co-sign that and she's stupid, but I am going to co-sign okay. that the woman does not know how to use Instagram. She does not know how to use Instagram. That's what I think. I think that, or not even not how to use, I think that she made a comment while she was drinking her matcha, put her phone down, probably spoke to herself in the mirror for an hour like she does every day. I think she's an insane woman. I think that she is fully unhinged, and I think that the performance is one of the best I've ever seen, and that's why she should have won the Tony, and that's why she did.
She's playing Norma Desmond.
She is crazy.
Method.
She's nutso. I mean, that performance too was nutso. Was her speech also nutso? Yes. I think that speech was nutso.biz. However, I still live.
We were living. They were eating out of her hand. I was kind of like, you know, taking a tally of the standing ovations. Obviously, Hamilton, everybody off their feet. Obviously, Audra, everybody off their feet. Jack Malone, off their feet.
Oh, wow.
Nicole, off their feet. I'm sorry. Well, that's the thing. You go to a lot of theater and how many times, you know, how many times you witness when somebody brings down the house in the middle of the show, right? People, I don't know if people know that term. They brought the house down. You stop, a show stopper is literally people leap to their feet. Now, feet. I told you I'm hungover. Okay.
the feet.
And for as much theater as I've seen, I've lived in New York for 21 years. For as much theater as I've seen in Broadway houses, Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, it doesn't, they're not a whole lot of showstoppers that I can think of in the middle of the show. And Nicole does it every night.
Yeah. I do feel like she was training for the Tony performance because all the cameras, she's used to having all the cameras on her during the actual show. And then you can tell when there's like an ease about her in front of Radio City Music Hall. But I also think that there was a genius decision made with Death Becomes Her doing For the Gays as their number. I think it was so smart, even though I miss Jennifer Simard being up there.
Totally.
Death Becomes Her, to me, is actually my favorite show that I saw like as a whole, even though Nicole was God tier. I think that it makes it even more iconic that Death Becomes Her won only one Tony Award for costumes and lost the others. I think it like adds to the lore of like this show will live on in gay infamy, even for the fact that it lost every Tony Award, you know?
And she got that support. I mean, the fact that Beyonce and Tina rolled through for the opening, I mean, that was huge. That was huge.
What about, since we love a hot take, before we get into some Maddie Herstory, do you have any like favorite or least favorite shows of the season that since you've seen so much?
I mean, the favorites were the ones that you saw win. I mean, Oh Mary for me, Oh Mary is another one I saw three times, and I saw it at the Lortel at the very beginning. And, you know, Cole, how can we just like wax poetic about Cole for a second?
Thank goodness Cole won.
I said in my predictions, and I also said it on the Peloton platform because I do talk about Broadway on Peloton. I said, I want to live in a world where beautiful, genderqueer, nonconforming, non-binary Cole Escola beats out George Clooney for a major award. And it happened and they all rose to their feet.
Yes.
And
it was so satisfying to also watch Cole give a speech mentioning Grindr and then have the camera cut to George Clooney. There's just something so you know what it is for me, I think, as like a gay adult healing his inner trauma is watching a straight movie star be the minority in a room full of gays. What is so healing to me.
And it's so awesome to watch the people who have, especially having been in New York for so long, people who we've watched like do the downtown stuff.
Yeah.
People we've seen, you know, and
when Cole shouted out Jeffrey.
Oh, Jeffrey, Cole and Jeffrey, like people don't even remember. Like, y'all remember Logo? Remember when we used to watch Logo? I'm like, oh my God, Cole and Jeffrey, they've just been doing it for so long and put in their time, right? They like, right, what do they say? Overnight sensation takes 10 years. God, it's 20. Like it's been 20. They are amazing. Give them their flowers.
Well, I'm gagged too. You know, when you talked about the Lin-Manuel being 45 of it all and they're talking as if he died, it's the same thing to me with Cole and Jeffrey, which is that, you know, they started when they were both basically children. I think Jeffrey said he they were like 19 when they first started putting videos, or 20.
Totally.
And so I'm sure like they feel like they've lived 10 lives because they have, and yet they're actually not old. They're quite young, but to be so confident in their own artistic voices, and like, it's really fucking cool to see. I don't know if you agree, but the longer we live on this earth and the more we see the people around us start to succeed, I'm sure you knew 50 million people in the show last night. I, through this podcast, have gotten to like interview and meet people that were part of the show. And it's just like, I don't know, it feels really good to know that sticking to your gay guns does pan out in the end, no matter who what you are.
For sure. Absolutely. And there's a lot of temptation, and it's very easy to get sidetracked. And I do believe in manifesting. I do believe in hard work. And there's something to be said, especially, I don't know anything other than New York. I've actually lived in New York longer than where I was raised. I was raised in Rhode Island. And if, as again, another cliche, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. If you stick it out in New York long enough, at some point, you get over the hump and the world of New York City can really open up to you.
Oh, that's.
But it does require a hustle. You can't just be like, you can't be chill about it. You just can't be chill about it. You have to be kind. You have to, relationships are incredibly important. I was a bartender. I was an executive assistant. I was a nightlife promoter. I've worked many different jobs in television. I've been a personal trainer. I've dog walked. I mean, if you are willing to put the time in, I promise you, every single little step along the way, it actually all connects. Like, I'll tell you, people who used to be my regulars at my bar are people who now help me out in my career at 40. It's pretty amazing.
I love that. It's also crazy to see, like, the amount of those people that are also working with you in the Peloton world. I mean, I don't know what your history is with Mel Robbins, but the fact that you got to do a ride with her,
and even
you even said, I think in a caption that she like gave you her card or something and said, whenever you need help, and then
a DM.
And then there she was. But I want to talk about the Peloton of it all, but it's important that we get into the origin story of Maddie. And so I'm going to ask the famous podcast question, Maddie. Whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
I'm so excited for this question. And I thought really long and hard. And a lot of different names came up. So there's like the coming out of it all. So I have people that were the reason why I came out. But the one human that made me gay is a woman who you may identify as Rosie O'Donnell. Has anybody given that answer before?
You know, if they have, it's been a long fucking time. And I'm breathing in that gorgeous answer. Can you tell me, Maddie, your Rosie connection? Was it like the Rosie O'Donnell show?
It was the Rosie O'Donnell. I've never met Rosie O'Donnell. I remember watching the Rosie O'Donnell show as a kid. And just, it wasn't her sexuality at all. It was what she would speak about. And you got John McDee and the McDLTs on the keys over there. And just, I'm like, this feels gay. This feels. And then the fact that, especially for a theater kid, the fact that Rosie would have numbers from those most popular Broadway shows at the time, where we didn't have YouTube, right? So if you lived not in New York City and were not seeing touring or regional shows or regional theater, the only way you could see any kind of theater was you'd have to wait for the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, right? And the Tonys. And so two times a year, that's all you could see it on TV, really, truly. And Rosie brought that to us. And I was like, oh, okay, this is gay for me. I like this a lot. Like, I think I remember, God, it must have been maybe the first Broadway performance I ever saw in Rosie. It must have been the Chicago revival. So we're talking like B.B. Newworth.
Yeah, 90s, yeah, yeah.
I want to say 96.
Sure.
And that's when I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, you know what? Sorry, Dad. This like basketball team's not working out. I would rather do show tunes. You know,
I'd rather be Amos or Richard Gere.
Bella Faye.
My name. I think you're so spot on that show, the Rosie O'Donnell show, was so gay. But what I find to be interesting about her is that she was like kind of professionally and publicly straight at that time. She was living in an era where it was like very much dangerous to come out. And I think Ellen came out like in this era where then she was essentially like lost her career for a while. But
lost,
I think that
canceled.
Yeah, but Rosie like was able to hold on to the reins of a really gay show while still like doing it in a way that kept her bills being paid. And I think that when you look back at that, one of the people that made me gay that's connected to the Rosie O'Donnell show is Seth Rudetsky. Since this is such a gay Broadway episode, when my dad would put on Sirius Radio, knowing that I was a theater kid, he would turn on the Broadway channel and Seth Rudetsky. I mean, some of my like comedy bits, I absolutely stole from him. Where like,
amazing.
If you make a joke and then you don't get a laugh, he's like, anybody, nobody. Like,
hysterical. There's
like he. And also, I think just him like being like a gay Jew, I felt like I knew him. And so anywho, Seth Rudetsky was one of the writers on the Rosie O'Donnell show. And it just...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was a part of... Oh. And I believe Judy Gold might have been too. Probably. I might have made that up. But just like okay. a lot of like gays, smart and Jewy gays were a part of Rosie O'Donnell's show. And if we go full circle, now to see her go from... making so many of us gay to now, have you been watching And Just Like That, the new season?
I haven't caught up yet.
I only watched the first one.
I watch a lot of TV, and unfortunately, And Just Like That hasn't been on my radar. I loved all of Sex and the City, but
I don't blame. It's really how do I say this? I think it's just really quite not good. But okay, it's also right.
That's fair.
It's also like watching a dog walk on its hind legs. It's sure. a little like car accident-y. And okay. it's not much of a spoiler because it's the first episode, but Rosie O'Donnell plays a nun
okay.
who has come to terms with the fact that she is gay. And then, of course, the writers have Cynthia Nixon sleep with Rosie. This is the first episode of the new season.
Oh.
And so,
oh, hold on, wait. I'm just getting that mental image out of my head.
It's just because what happened is I watched the first episode of the new season. And then after that, HBO Max put on a OG Sex and the City episode. And it was just so crazy to see the juxtaposition between how far we have strayed from God's light. But
how far
it really is. Just all this to say, Rosie is a part of the cultural conversation. And we hope she is till the day she dies.
I'll always love Rosie. Everything always. Even if she's not.
I would have said yes if I was Rosie to being a nun on the first episode. And just like that, like she made no wrong decisions. But let's get into your journey as this gay ass Peloton instructor who, of course, you had a long journey to get there. What I've done in my research is found out that you were, yes, first an on-air news anchor, but you were assigned a story that was like really kind of dark-sided, and then you decided to sort of pivot out of news anchoring.
Totally,
why do you think so many gay boys want to be anchors on the news? Is it just funny? Because we like a red light on a camera?
Right. We're like, oh, no talent. What are we going to do? We can read. No. And actually, just a slight correction. Anchor, I was never at an anchor desk. I mean, you work your way up. I mean, that anchor desk, that's nice. I was like a one-man band reporter. So in the field, picture Maddie on the Long Island Expressway, snot dripping down his nose. There's an inch of snow. And
tripod.
I'm recording. Yeah, I'm my own tripod. Camera trained on me, and I'm, you know, I just saw snowplow come by on the Long Island Expressway. Looks like there's an interesting, you know, very that.
And then you said I need to be in studio.
Yeah, and that specific story was, oh God, it was, I like to say New Jersey and Long Island, I know you're from St. Louis, but like it's, you know, the Long Island, if I like to say like when bad things happen on Long Island, it's really not because there are a whole lot of bad things. It's just there's like stupidity, right? It's just people are not paying attention. They're not present. The stories were like, man leaves his baby in the car in 90 degree heat, baby dies. You know, go cover that story. Girl walks across Long Island Expressway at midnight, you know, drunk driver kills the 15-year-old girl. Oof. So when it's just this one story after another, that then they're like the directive, and you know TV, it's like not a whole lot of heart in it. Okay, well, we have the address of the family. Go knock on the door. So here's me like as a, you know, twit here with my like monkey suit on, my suit and tie, and I'm like with my camera. Hi, is anybody home? Can you tell me how are you feeling now that your daughter just died last night? Like, what? Who is this helping? Who's watching? Who cares? this isn't helping anybody. This is inflicting way more pain.
Yeah, that should be like a trained grief therapist talking to them, not like
a correct. Not me that like was working for honestly a station that we weren't even we were like the always the last one to the story because like I don't drive that fast. I'm actually not a good driver. I don't even like to drive. Like I'm like driving myself. This was nobody was getting breaking news here, and I realized, you know what? I can't. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. Like lifestyle TV sounds fun. But again, having gigged so much, it's like, well, listen, I can bartend, I can personal train. And that's when I kind of relented and sort of, you know, it felt like I was taking a step backwards. I was like, okay, I guess I'm doing fitness again. And then in truth, and here's a good lesson to anybody that's like trying to figure out their career. Nope, go with your gut. It's okay. Sometimes you do have to take a step back and be like, you know what? You know what you're good at, and actually you know what pays the bills.
Yeah.
And then flash forward to something like Peloton. I have the best, Eric, I have the best job in the world. I have so much fun doing my job.
Well, you're so fucking good at it too. And I think that it's really important what you just said about you're never taking actually a step back. It's just you're like trying to, you're gaining perspective, because I think that a lot of theater kids in high school dream that being an actor is their only path. Mm. That's why there are so many musical theater programs.
Sure.
And I'm bringing this up because there's such a narrative that if you stop doing theater, if that was your dream as a 17-year-old, then you have failed or you're taking steps back. But I think that no matter what your career is, that if you are pivoting in any way, that is a fucking moment of strength and excitement for you to not feel like a failure, but it's for you to say, oh, actually, I'm just honoring like what I feel like I deserve, because what I'm doing right now is not it. And so what you did was like, I am going back into fitness. And maybe you felt like it was a step back, but like you're saying, you were just honoring where you felt good, where a place that felt good. Because now, I mean, Peloton, it's this amazing community that I think what you do so well is that you are not the type of fitness instructor that makes people feel bad in any sense of the way. It's the opposite.
And my audience that I've captured, and actually it's funny, I do have a life coach, and I was talking to her because I was talking about my like main demographic, which skews a little bit older. Like it's like my mom and her friends, I call them my moms. I mean, talk about Jewish moms. Oh my God. I have like six Jewish moms who text me a regular basis.
Shout out.
Absolutely. One of them lives 10 blocks away from me. Two of them like run my fan page. And it's so fun. Imagine having six. I have my own mom. So imagine having six of them. And my mom's Italian. There's so much. It's all the same, right? It's all the same. They ask the same questions. But I'm like, why is this my audience? And the reason why they are my audience is because I think about when I was, this is a very common probably experience for gay people. I was the kid that wasn't out on the soccer field or football field playing soccer with boys my age. I was hanging with the teachers, right, at recess. And then I think about when my first kind of exposure to fitness, my mom was doing step aerobics, right? And so my mom would bring me to step aerobics and I would sit in the kids' room. But then after with the girls, we would go and have coffee and bagels at Such a Bagel in Smithfield, Rhode Island. It's still there. And I would sit there like sometimes with my coloring book and not pay attention, but honestly, just listen to them kvetch about their husbands.
Oh yeah.
Bitch about, talk about people, gossip, talk about what they're watching, talk about what was in the tabloids at the time.
Oh yeah, no, us gay kids at like 12 were counseling Deborah on her divorce.
Exactly. So we were, even as the, we were as 15-year-olds, we were 30-year-olds at that. So now I'm like, I'm 40. Okay, so now I guess I'm 60 now.
Right.
So
like, but that's a great demographic to have. Because I think that what my fitness bagage, it stems from PE class and like the locker room where I felt like this like gay kid with too much body hair that I was deeply mortified of having, who was bad at sports. And so I felt like anything related to fitness, I really kind of always felt not good about. And sure. So I think that like, I'm still working on my relationship to exercise now. Mm. But before we
find something that you love, find something that you love. Go to an instructor you know. Or go to, or bring some, I'm happy to go with you. Go bring some friends and like make it a bit of a part, you know, a bit of a party. That's the best. That's really when I fell in love with fitness, I fell in love with it because I was like, oh, okay, I'm not competing against anybody. I am doing it because I'm doing it with people who I love.
I totally agree. It's something I look forward to is when I manifest that I'm making my, I say my Andy Cohen level of money is like what I don't need Andy Cohen's level of money, but I do okay. Like, I do look forward to like making delicious money where I can either like go to as many Barry's classes as I want
sure.
or hire a personal trainer who is as much of a genius as Maddie. Like, but I also want to get into your personal life because we see so much of your fitness stuff online, but your beautiful relation with Evan is so stunning. And you have an engagement video that I know happened a bit ago, but I just, I watched it again. And if anybody's listening has not watched it, I watched it this morning. And there's this engagement video of you two at the Met. Jessica Vosk is singing Kacey Musgraves. And I feel like we get desensitized to like proposal videos because TikTok is full of them. Cried my eyes out, Maddie.
Right.
Cried my goddamn eyes out.
Right. Isn't that so? It was nuts. It wasn't last September. It was the September before. We have a very long engagement. We're finally getting married in October. And
Mazel tov. Wait, this October?
This October.
Oh my God.
It's happening finally. Yeah. I mean, and you know what? I have to say, Eric, it metastasized, if that's the right word. It was this big, going to be this big bloated thing. With a ton of people and a lot of money. I had actually signed contracts and everything ready to go. And then
you're talking about the wedding itself?
Yeah, the wedding itself. And I was like, you know what? I don't want to spend all this money. So guess what? We're going to do it like in our apartment. And I am very lucky. I live on Central Park. Central Park is our place. You can get a permit for like $20. To go out and have like a gathering just so they don't bother you in Central Park. We're going to do it like a picture, a flash mob ceremony. That's what's going to happen. Okay. So again, the engagement, oh my God, I'm over here. I'm just doing some work. I think it was doing maybe a voiceover audition or was on a Zoom or something. And it's like 5:30. Evan's like, we got to go to the Met. His friend Ryan had said, oh, you know, we got this nice invite to go after hours to the Met. The museum, and we're going to get a private tour. And again, jaded Maddie, having lived in New York City for 20 years, I've been to the Met. Do I really need to go? Like, oh, it's like, Maddie, no, go. It's really important to his friend Ryan. And I'm like, okay, fine. So I like put on my clothes. We're kind of running late and we go and I'm like, okay, yeah, see, like kind of seen it. Lovely. All right. Right. Love it. We get up to the beautiful roof deck, the Iris Canner roof deck up there. And this gorgeous, you know, art installation because it is an art museum. And then, oh, and it had been raining like for days before, and then it continued to rain days after. For whatever reason, this night was the most golden, the most amazing sunset. And we're like, let's go upstairs, take photos of the sunset. We get up there. I see champagne glasses. I'm like, oh, they must be having an event. And then I come around the art installation and then I see everybody who we love, my whole family, his whole family. And I'm like, oh my God, this is what is happening right now. And then I turn the corner and then there's Jessica singing Golden Hour, which is our song. Kacey Musgraves, it's our song. I'm getting really like verklempt over here too. It was amazing. I mean, you know you're gay when Jessica Vosk shows up to sing at your engagement.
Literally, I'm not joking. There's like the beginnings of tears forming because I just think like Kacey Musgraves is just like a huge one for me.
Oh.
If you imagine like one of your favorite Broadway voices,
mm-hmm.
It's let alone watching Jessica Voss perform at a musical, mm-hmm. it's a gift. Mm-hmm. But then for you to be showing up at your own engagement and to have that be for you to celebrate your love. And your fiance is so fucking hot and gorgeous.
Oh, he's so hot. He's so cute. You as he's a like couple, a little Pokemon.
Oh, you're both so fucking hot. In fact, Evan wore
a dress
last night that was so divine, but also the picture of him peeing with you next to him is
holding the dress.
I'm telling you, like, gender is of the past, and I love that you get to watch your hot fiance in a beautiful black gown stand up peeing.
They just were stopping him left and right. You know, obviously, come on, it's the Tony. It's very gay, but there's just something about, I mean, his muscles rippling out of the back. Yes. Oh, and we were late. We were late because I was like, babe, I'm really going to lace you up the right way. He had worn it before. And I was like, and the two times he had worn it before, we didn't lace it up the right way. I was like, and it was like falling. I said, I'm going to scientifically really do this. I actually busted one of the loops. I was so nervous. I broke into a full sweat. And, you know, here's another thing. And, you know, for your listeners who like may have complicated or developing relationships with their families. Part of Evan's family is they're very Catholic. They're very Italian and very Catholic. And his aunt was here visiting with his mom. His mother's very open and accepting. We call her Margarita. She likes to have a good time. And she loves all the gay stuff. In fact, I got them tickets to go see Kelly and Mark this morning, like last minute. I am the star brother, son-in-law right now.
Yeah, you are.
I was like, and I surprised him. I was like, you guys are going to go see Mark and Kelly and Mark live this morning. And they were like, what? Peed their pants. But his aunt was here and she is very religious and those are her beliefs. And we obviously her coming to visit us is action on her part enough to be like, I want to see how they live. And I want to see. No, it's true.
I'm only laughing at the Tony Awards.
Right.
I'm picturing I'm just picturing.
Well, not only that, but she witnessed Evan in a dress, and she witnessed me in full drag the day before.
Yeah, no, she visited you during the gayest time of the
Pride,
year.
The gayest. And you know what? It was lovely. I really do feel, I haven't done a rehash yet. I don't think they're even back to Rochester yet. I think we moved the needle a little bit. Like, I know they
sure
did. Sunday morning, they went to Mass at St. Patrick's. So they went to like that. They did drag and they went to Mass at St. Patrick's. And, you know, so listen, that is. And if we're going to talk a little bit more about Peloton before we go, like that is really like that's the way in. It's just I am I try not to be. I don't want to beat you over the head with it. I'm going to say what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
But I, you know, Mama Oprah, like you got to meet people where they are and you have to understand, listen, if this is somebody who was raised really believing in the Bible and really believing in that text as being really literal, like Jesus really walked on water and Jonah, there was Jonah and there was a whale and he, did he come out of the whale? I don't know.
couldn't tell you.
It was in a sperm whale. So anyway,
hopefully.
So you have to understand that. You have to understand that. But the fact that they showed up and Evan's aunt was like, yeah, I'm going to come to Maddie's drag class. He's dressed as Lady Liberty. I didn't want to make an explicit political statement with that. Because again, with Peloton, we want it to feel like it makes sense. But a man dressed as a woman dressed as the Statue of Liberty inherently is a political statement.
It is. But I think I want to co-sign the meet people where they are of it all, because I think that right now people are understandably trying to like stay in their own parts of the political spectrum and like safety of communities, which I get it. Cause it's like, we need to protect each other. But when it comes to family, your choice to me becomes either you disagree and then never talk again, which is the some people's thing they have to do to take care of themselves, which I support. But a lot of us want to still have the connection to the people that raised us, even if whether it's the Bible or their own ways of thinking that don't align with us. I mean, mine is so, I'm very lucky in so many ways to have a supportive family, but in other ways, there are parts of my life that I've had to grieve that my family will never understand. And instead of carrying anger or a deep sadness, I've really done a lot of work to do exactly what you said, which is like know what my family feels about me and about my life. And the lack of their lack of understanding does not equate to their lack of love, much like religious family members who, like, listen, if someone's being a fucking, you know, terrible person to you, that's one thing. But if they're actually like showing you love, going to their mass at St. Patrick's, who are we
and
to say?
And actually, on their way out to St. Patrick's, like, I genuinely said to her, please say a prayer for us. And then I corrected. I said, I'm not being snarky, facetious. I'm like, please do. Like, we need it. You know,
all prayers
please
help, prayer. Baby.
You know,
all
don't. I'm not going to convert. Sorry,
Are you? Are gate cooked? Well, I think there are some gay Catholics.
I mean, I was raised Catholic. Actually, we just got back from Rome. I wanted to see Papa Leo, and we got there. He did the Angelus prayer on Sunday at noon. It was the second time he did it. I was like, let's get there and let's go see. He came out of his little window. We're like, oh, Papa Leo. You know, I mean, I don't know. There's just something to be said about it.
Yeah, there's an American Pope. Shout out. Now,
shout out.
There was an episode that we released with Jake Wesley Rogers, who's an amazing singer, and they are like, you know, have a relationship with God and are pretty have a lot of faith. And I was almost nervous to put it out because it was very different from our episodes that we usually put out.
Okay.
But I got a lot of messages.
So like less fun. It was just,
and a little more of like,
Got it.
And I was a little like, well, hopefully.
Sotto voce.
Sotto voce. But I did get a bunch of messages from people that really resonated with the religious, like the intricacies of like gay people's relationship to God and religion. And I think that we're kind of nailing it right now, which is that it's so complicated. But at the end of the day, we have to build ourselves up and not expect any of our families to do so in the ways that we really need. That's what I've at least had to do, is like understand that I'm not going to get everything I need said in the way that I need by some people in my life. But that doesn't, like, it doesn't mean that we have to live a life of suffering.
No. And yeah, it's perfect for, you know, that's a good message for Pride. And I said this during my Pride class as Mara, as my drag persona. She said, I think it was playing Let's Have a Kiki. Come on, we all know that classic. And it's lock the doors, lower the blinds. And I think I made, you know, the reference like, listen, there was a time where we had no choice as queer people to lock the doors and lower the blinds. And then we could have our Kiki because our safety was at stake. There are people who want us to be erased. They are literally taking,
or go back and put the blinds
exactly,
back down.
Put the blinds down. And especially this year, Pride has always been a protest. We know it started as a riot. I don't like, I don't necessarily, I like to correct people when they say Pride parade. I'm like, it's a march. It's a march, but there's celebration. So we must remember going into a year that clearly the government is going one way. We are not going to damper our light. We are still going to have the party, baby, because we need it. Because they, at the end of the day, they hate our joy. So we need to be joyful. We need to have fun. But you know what? We can fucking march at the same time. And that's what we're doing.
Just like you being Mara in a Peloton class, like, it is all activism when we show up as gay and loud as we can. And the fact that the music that you play is so fucking gay is,
it's so gay.
Affirming. It is affirming. I do love when you talk about the backstory. I love BTS, like, business things. Can you tell me really fast? Can you tell me about the series of interviews you had for Peloton? Because in my research, it says you had like 10 or 11.
Oh, yeah.
Is it harder to book Peloton than it is to book Elphaba? What is going on?
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, that was, you know, that was 8 years ago. So believe me, now it's even harder. I don't know if I'd ever make the cut now. But you need to be able to jump off that screen. You need to be able to know what the fuck you're doing. You need to be able to be a good storyteller. It'd help if you weren't a chain smoker.
Sure.
I had to drop all those bad habits. It was worth it. I mean, they were like, we want you, but you're gonna audition. And Robert Nozon, who is our, you know, head instructor, talk about a powerhouse. I was so nervous. I mean, in the fitness industry, she's a giant. And even back then, 8 years ago, I was like, Robin, oh my God, I have to get in front of Robin. But I did, talk about gay music. I think I played, I definitely played Wit. I probably played, I'd have to go back. I know I played If You Could Read My Mind from 54, which is like Amber, Jocelyn, oh my God, Ultra Nutte. I think I played Million Dollar Bill. Like, I mean, the gayest. I was like, yep. They're like, what kind of music do you like? And I was like, gay music.
Picture shirtless, sweaty men jumping up and down, whatever they're dancing to.
That's what I'm playing.
It's so delicious to see you be so proudly a faggotrini, especially in a fitness world that, as I said, has made me feel like completely not of value. And to see the way that you're doing it now, it really does like heal the insecure Eric inside. Before we round out this interview, we have to do the final podcast question. Maddie, you've been so great to enjoy this extra long Tony gay ass episode. Maddie, the final question is, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Megan Mullally. Specifically as Karen Walker. Karen Walker exists not singularly. I like to say that the best three television characters of all time are Tony Soprano, Eric Cartman, and Karen Walker. Okay. In history, like if you only had to take three with you, and Karen Walker, Megan Mullally she's the one. There is nothing. If we don't have Megan Mullally, we have no one.
And you know what's why it's such a good answer is that Megan Mullally is the character actress worth saving, and she made us gay. Because
absolutely,
that caricatrice who is slightly catty,
yep,
mostly alcoholic,
uh-huh,
best friends with a loud gay guy,
uh-huh, uh-huh,
has
not
a husband,
frenemies with a tall Jewish woman. Oh, or frenemies with the one and only Beverly Leslie.
Also,
R.I.P. Leslie.
Also,
Beverly Leslie. Well, if it isn't Karen Walker, I knew I smelled gin and regret.
Exactly. I mean, she as Karen Walker, she has saved us all. And she deserves to be saved. And I'm so glad that you, Maddie, have saved her as your character actress.
She's on the arc.
She's on two of them. Save two of them. Maddie, it has been such a delight having you on. I have to say that ever since asking you to do this pod and us being friends in the DMs, I feel like I've known you forever. I think you are
I
think you are so fucking funny.
Aww.
And just a delicious human being inside and out. And it has been such a pleasure having you on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Finally, will you please tell our listeners where they can follow you and if there's anything you'd like to clear?
Please subscribe to the Peloton app. It does pay my bills, hands down. But it's really the best connected fitness you can find. And there's something for everyone. You don't have to take my gay ass classes. You can take beautiful Adrian Williams, who's this just sexy, amazing man who just knows so much about fitness. You can take Bex Gentry, who's an ultra marathoner. So like, and even if you just subscribe for, I do these great 10-minute core classes. You don't need a bike. You don't need a tread. You just need a floor. Mm. And most people have a floor. If you can put something soft down, like a mat, that'd be great. And you can do 10-minute abs with me, which is really great. So that's fun. But you also, you can use it to take my Mara classes. I do these crazy Halloween classes. I do, you know, actually, by the time this comes out, this might be announced. Like, we're doing a Cynthia Erivo artist series this week. Yes. Yes. Finally. Yeah, exactly. So things like that. And then, of course, you can follow me on the gram. I'm not a TikToker. I really should work on it more. But at Maddie Magiacomo, you can look how to spell my name in the, you know, text for this podcast. But yeah, follow me there.
Exactly. It is all linked in the description. Maddie, you are making the world so much gayer. And thank fucking God. And I will see you on the mat or in the clear or maybe at next year's Tony's. Who can say?
Bye, baby.
Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. If that is too much work for you and you're watching on YouTube, just click like. It's such a help. Such a gay ass help. And speaking of gay ass, there's more gay assery over on Substack. Every single week, we do bonus episodes there. Full video, full audio. And Derek Cage is this week's guest, who you might know from porn. I love you all so much. Happy Pride. Thank you to Maddie for being so gorgeous, so funny, so great. And I'll see you next week for another stunning gay ass guest. Bye.
You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed to us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or Patreon at Gay Ass Podcast. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.